G'day and welcome to Oceanic Gaming Radio. This is episode 90 on the 1st of the 4th, 2024. My name's Captain Perth and alongside me, Redweird slash Adrian. What do you want to go by?
At the moment, I've been using the handle or name or whatever, Shameless Flirt.
Shameless Flirt.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. That was actually earlier before we went live.
All right. Get a little dose.
Adrian enticed me with an accidental. Well, I don't know if it was accidental. I think it may have been, you know, potentially not crotch cam, which was excellent. But unfortunately, I didn't see that because we're using a new recording software that we're trialing this time. Actually, I need to fucking post. We're going live on here. I need to do that on here as well because fucking one man band here because there's no Grizz this week. He's out on an oil rig. Excuse me. So you got me, and I mean, in all honesty, we've traded up. We've got friggin' Adrian, and he's got some shit to say about some video games, and I can't wait to dive in. Oh, man, it's going to be brilliant. Now, I want to know how your Easter was, mate. What happened? Give me the rundown.
Well, had the Friday off. School finished Thursday, so that was my first term teaching.
Yeah.
So a long night.
How was it?
Over.
Like overall, what, like give us, you
oh,
know.
Oh, dude, so fun, man. I had such a good time.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard work. You work pretty much constantly.
Yeah.
And then I think that works better for me though. Insane amounts of work and then a period of rest.
Do you think that's like the ADHD mentality of just work in general? It's kind of nice just to get it done in a fucking block rather than have it drip fed over like.
Yeah, I feel like I need to be under constant and immense time pressure to be productive. So if it's like an 8 hour where there's no oversight and you kind of like can work if you have to, it's hard for me to motivate myself. But
yeah, 100%.
Like you're on constantly. So it works. Yeah, it's good. It's just,
how about
it's
your
just
like
fun,
your
man.
Subjects and shit that you were doing? What's your flavor?
I just teach English. I've got 2 year eights, year 10, a year 12, and a year 9 class.
Yeah.
And they're all right. They're all different.
Yeah. Is there any have you got any students that are like complete savants and you're just like, man, you're going to be a fucking, you're something else?
I would say no one that is like especially smart.
Yeah.
I've got 2 year eight classes. And like the gap between them is quite large. One's like a higher ability class, one's a lower ability. But I wouldn't say it's like I have any like learning disabilities. There's some like dyslexia and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any real sort of cognitive, at least that I haven't identified. I've only seen it for about 9 weeks so far.
Yeah.
It's really fun. It's like, it's funny as people, when I tell people that I'm a teacher, when I was studying to be a teacher, they'd be like, oh man, I could never do that. You know, I could never work with kids. It's like, is working with adults good?
Not really.
No. You know,
kids, I mean, working fun, with man. Anyone just kind of sucks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. But yeah, kids are fun, man. They're really funny. And they give you like 100% of their personality, which is interesting.
Yeah, do you know what? It was interesting. I don't know if you maybe experienced this in other places that you've worked, but do you think that's just the fucking, because Mia, I spoke to Mia about this a little while ago, because she brought it up, because she's got a new person that she's working with and they're a millennial. What's the current one? The Gen Z? Is that Z?
Yeah, Gen Z, I think. Gen Z?
Yeah, Z. Yeah.
Gen
so,
y,
anyway. Yeah, man, I can't keep up with it. But anyways, regardless, she was saying that, when she said it, I was like, yeah, that fucking makes sense. That generation of people, they don't have a split between their like friendship, social personality and their work mentality or personality.
Yeah.
It's just one continuum and they're always in it. So like,
yeah,
Yeah,
I've heard some similar reports from some of my friends that are working with Gen Z. And you can kind of get it. It's like, They're always on, I suppose, because they're constantly connected to the internet.
So actually, that's a good point.
There's no real switch.
There's no separation.
Yeah. And the other thing is that, like, this is pretty dire, but I think it's true. They don't really have any, like, when we grew up as millennials, there was that idea that, you know, you could get a good job and buy a house and all that stuff, which you sort of found out to be not as true or not true. But that kind of came to us like sort of later, around sort of like 2007. You know, we were pretty established as adults around that time. But for them, it's just been their whole lives, you know? So you can understand why they're not that into working, because for them, it doesn't really seem to be a huge amount of point to it. At least that's why I as an old man.
Yeah. And I suppose on top of that, like, and I see this more and more these days, I suppose, as well, is there's this whole kind of like side hustle thing as well, like whether it be streaming or whether it be having your own clothing brand or whether it be, fuck, I don't know, like making fucking soap or some shit. I don't know. I feel like everyone kind of takes their idea of a professional career and kind of, I guess, tries to sidestep that a little bit as much as possible, you know, which is totally fine. Don't get me wrong. But I guess that's one thing I notice with a lot of people and younger people these days is they tend to always have that, like, that side hustle. Like, I went to I went to like a market recently when we went down south for holidays. And there was like, I'm kid you not, I've never seen so many people that have their own clothing brand that are trying to make their own clothing brand work. Yeah. And I'm like, guys, I hate to tell you about economic saturation, but it's fucking Quicksilver not looking exists. Good. Like, I only need so many shirts, you know?
I think part of it is like that same sort of thing. It's like our parents, you know, especially our parents' parents, you'd start a job and you just work at that same place for your whole life. And you'd get regular raises and you'd be able to buy a house and have a family on that wage. And they'd take care of you and they wanted to keep you around. And now it's like, it's as a employee, it's in your interest to job hop because each time you switch jobs, you get a raise. And you're unlikely to get one sticking at one business.
And 100%. Same
for the employer. It's better to hire someone because you're hiring budget's higher than your retention budget most of the time.
Yeah.
So,
which is kind of fucked, don't you think?
Oh, it's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea.
You because onboarding is so expensive.
Dude, and it's expensive in invisible ways. Like, I'm not I'm not really a white collar guy. It's my first white collar job ever. But even working at this pub/bottle shop, which shall remain nameless, they had this really high turnover rate. And it just caused constant problems because there's a million things you've got to do in one of those kind of jobs, and it's up to the person who have been there long enough to have learned it from somebody else.
Yep.
So if you lose that link, it becomes all this like information and knowledge needs to be relearned normally when something really bad happens that needs to be fixed extremely quickly.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. 100%. Similar things happening in the education system. There's plenty of like teachers that have been doing it their whole lives, and there's plenty of graduates, but we're losing that middle chunk, teachers that have been doing it for like 5 to 10 years, because they're moving on because of for many different reasons. But you lose
get paid better elsewhere or whatever else.
Yeah, get paid better elsewhere. The job's easier. Like, you really got, it's kind of a job, or at least I think you really have to enjoy it. Otherwise, it would be a living nightmare.
Oh, totally.
So, like, but yeah, all these graduate teachers need those sort of 5 to 10 year teachers to learn from. They're a really valuable source of information because they're kind of close enough to the developments in pedagogy to help you, and close enough to your age, I guess, to understand what you're going through.
Yeah,
whereas
for sure,
a lot of the sort of like later stage teachers that have been doing it for a career for a long time, it's like unconscious to them almost because they're just so practiced at it.
Yeah, dude. And do you know what? It's funny because you do see that, like, I feel like that's not a isolated issue, right? Like, even in development, you know, finding developers that will stick in one spot is difficult because they're not rewarded to stay where they are a lot of time, 100%. Right? Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, you know, you could potentially save yourself a shitload of money if you just looked after your current employees. Yeah. And you don't realize, like, brain drain is such a horrific concept that people just don't put enough effort into thinking about, funnily enough, given the name. But it's one of those things that, like, it's a significant, like, drawdown on finance, and also 100%. Just general morale, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's
and even like just the ease at which you complete tasks,
yeah,
you know, which is is massive, but it's not, it's almost invisible, it's hard to see compared to the bottom line.
Fucking crazy, man. Well, how was the Easter after the first term that was, my friend?
Dude, it was so good, man. I just sat around, I played some video games.
Love
and
it.
Then went, saw my partner's family yesterday, had some turkey, a bit of gravy, mashed potato, etc.
Nice, man. Fun.
Man, enjoyed it. It's been good so
Love
far.
It. Yeah,
how
with
you
mate.
How was your Easter?
Bloody good, mate. We went to Dunsborough down south, which is about 3 hours out of Perth, southwest. Ish, well, it is southwest. So we cruised down there on the Friday. First thing, Ted woke up at 5:30, got straight onto the freeway. Bang, down there. We managed to miss pretty much all of the crazy, maniacal, you know, holiday traffic that happens over the Easter long weekend. So that was good. got there, kind of cruised, hung out with my uncle who was down there as well, had a few tins. Lovely. And then we went to what did we do? The next day, we went to the Country Animal Life Farm. Ted saw a bunch of animals for the first time, and that was sick. Really cool. Managed to, you know, feed in, like, carrot sticks to rabbits and donkeys so and fun. Shit. It was really cool. So he loved that big time. and then just kind of cruised around. We went to the beach. That was good fun. I had a bit of a dip down at the Dunsborough shark net because I refuse to swim outside of shark nets.
Yeah, it just makes sense. Just good practice.
I just do not know why you would do it, like, outside of there. It's 100%. It's terrifying. I don't know about you, but I can't think of a worse way to die.
I don't go into the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, just I'm basically the Yeah, I mean, I look exactly like every single thing that a shark eats, so I don't want to improve my chances of that happening. So, I mean, you know,
so certainly there's like ignorance, and then there's intentional disregard.
Yeah, you're completely sabotaging your life. So I don't want to do that any longer. But yeah, look, it was awesome. We we came back on Sunday, and then we caught up with Mia's side of the family. And then kind of today, just kind of cruised around, had a little bit of work to do despite being Easter Monday. But, you know, sometimes you just got to get in there. But, yeah, it's been fucking wonderful. Other than that, really good. Really good little little Easter break. So, yeah. But, yeah. Now, look, we've got to stop talking about Easter, mate, because we got a lot of freaking shit to talk about. So let's freaking dive straight in, my good friend. Look, firstly, just want to say, yes, Grizz isn't here this week. We have shifted to the fortnightly recording schedule now. If you didn't hear about that, you would have you may have heard of in the last episode, moving from the weekly to the fortnightly, just because it's fucking easier. You know, there's only so many hours in the day, and I tell you what, I feel like there's even less than that currently. Yeah. So
you have a child. Have a small child.
Yeah, child also makes it very difficult. So also work's just requiring a lot of me and Grizz at the moment. So we kind of thought, you know what, fortnightly. I think that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what we're doing. Now, just want to say a big thanks to all of our wonderful Patreon subscribers. You guys freaking rock. They are the legends that come and put some dollars in our pocket every freaking week, baby. They are the following legends: Omisukai, Moosey, Caging Runt, Lee, GD, J-Libs, Brendan, Strops, and Slatos. Thank you for your continued patronage. Appreciate you immensely. Now, if you want to watch this show live, you can do so every Monday night, 7 p.m. Australian Western Standard Time. Otherwise, we're available on every single podcasting platform. You can find us, Spotify's, your Apple's, etc. Or just go to ogr.show and you'll find all of our freaking links there, baby. All right. Now, let's freaking read this freaking quest log. We got some shit to talk about. Big time. Now, Adrian, did you manage to play a bit of Dragon's Dogma?
I did, yeah. I played about 4 hours maybe so far.
That's a good little
It's cool. It's interesting. Compared to, I mean, I'm pretty sort of fresh to it. I played the first one a little bit and just couldn't get into it.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd check the second one out. I'm enjoying it. Have you been playing it?
I have too, yeah. So I've probably got, well, I'll tell you exactly how many hours I've got. I have got 9.2 hours. I've picked you on about five. But I imagine that our general maybe kind of approach and stuff has been fairly similar. So, I mean, before we dive into the controversies that are surrounding the game at the moment, let's just freaking talk about what we're thinking. So I'm just going to open it up. I think this is one of the better action RPGs I've played in a very long time. There's a lot, I think, to like about it. And I will kind of put a line in the sand. When I say action RPGs, I'm almost ignoring Soulsborne because I kind of feel like they exist in a separate kind of bucket that this particular game doesn't inhabit, but it definitely lends from that bucket. But I was talking to a friend today, and they put it in a, you know, despite having not played it, they put it in a really good example. It's kind of like a blend between almost Soulsborne but Skyrim, but probably closer to the Skyrim side of things. But they have all the kind of janky Japanese like RPG UI systems and all that kind of shit going on. But I'm just really enjoying the general gameplay loop of this game and how it approaches the whole idea of Western fantasy and putting that kind of spin on it. You know, the whole game is surrounded by you being this, this figure in history that seems to be getting resurrected time and time again. You're the Arisen, basically a dragon pops up out of nowhere, suddenly needs to be slain, and it steals your heart, and then you go on a big old quest to, you know, do the, you know, the slaying deed. Now, surrounding all that being the kind of, you know, very distilled kind of lore of the game, the combat is just a lot of fun. You're kind of going out into the world. It's nice and open, though, you know, very trailed and stuff. So you're sort of following trails and you kind of find little things off the trail and doing bits and pieces. But, you know, it's kind of got your fairly standard action RPG combat, but then it kind of flourishes into these many classes that you can play between magic and archery and rogue and, you know, more kind of melee-based, you know, sword and shield and great weapons. But the crux of a lot of it is these massive enemies that you can climb on and slap with your sword or whatever else. And it kind of lends a little bit from Shadow of the Colossus, maybe not as puzzly, but, you know, that kind of idea of climbing on the bosses and smacking them. And the combat just feels really good. It almost feels like they've managed to pull all the good things out of, like, Black Desert Online and kind of create something that has a little bit less, I don't know, pizzazz and you know, just optics. It kind of just feels like a really fun, kind of tightly knit, just responsive combat system. And then tying it all with, you know, this kind of, you know, you're leveling up your specializations and stuff, and you've got these dudes that run around you called pawns, and you can get them to kind of fill other classes to kind of round out your party. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I think I really like the approach to exploration in the game big time. I feel like when I go out, I'm finding new shit to do, and I'm kind of being challenged but not overly challenged, but then also I feel like all the stuff I'm finding in the world is I guess just kind of like not shit, you know what I mean? I think that was one thing with Elden Ring. You know, you kind of find interesting loot, whereas with this, you do also find interesting loot. There's a lot of consumables and stuff that you're finding and utilizing. But, yeah, I feel rewarded every time I go out. And, you know, you do end up doing some pretty big, significant treks because you've got to cover a lot of ground to go and get shit done. And it just doesn't really – it doesn't baby you much, and it doesn't teach you an awful lot out the bat. You kind of got to learn a little bits and pieces, and I really like that about this game. There's a lot of things I really like about it. But what about you, Adrian? How's your first 4 hours feel?
Well, I'm playing a mage, which is something that I would never do in, like, an RPG where it was just you in a party. Yep. But because of the pawn system and the fact that you can kind of round out your party to four players, it's really fun to sort of be standing back and like, I'm just probably just going to make a character that just like buffs my pawns, gets them to run in and bust chops.
Yeah.
And I do think that that system is really cool and interesting. And I can't really think of, at least right now, another game that does something like that, because your pawns actually learn from what you make them do. So like, if you're constantly recalling your pawns to protect you, they become more likely to protect people. The same is true if you send them out to attack, they become more aggressive.
Yeah.
So when you, because the cool thing about it, I think, is that you can send your pawns out into other people's games and they can hire them and have them fight with them. And then they come back and they've got a bunch of experience and like an item for you, which is very interesting. And it's just really fun to sort of be messing around with that. I feel like I haven't really kind of got to grips of like the whole commanding stuff. And I don't know how deep it is or if it's going to be deep enough to be really, really, really interesting. But there's so many cool things that this system allows them to do. It's like I was running down a trail, obviously, and I found this like little like outcropping thing, and I ran up there and killed a bunch of goblins, you know, because they're goblins. Yeah. And then I found this chest, opened it up, got this like cool hat, and then one of the pawns that I had in my party was from another person's game, and they referenced the fact that they're arisen or whatever hadn't found that item.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is like, it was actually a really cool kind of feeling because it makes you feel like, oh, cool. You know, I found something at least reasonably special because it was said to me that, you know, not everybody finds this.
Yeah.
Which I think is very cool. And I had a thought when you were talking about how it's like less flashy than other sort of action RPGs. And I think that's probably because if you had all this like lens flare and particle effects and stuff, it would be very hard to see what your pawns were doing.
Oh shit, yeah.
You know? So it's like, I think it's, it's quite, I think it's quite a well-made game. It's doing a lot of really interesting things. And yeah, the fact that you kind of have to, there's like no fast travel. I think you can, you get a cart and there's also like an item you can find or buy with real money that allows you to teleport from place to place. Which caused a lot of consternation, as it always does. But at least now I kind of get the feeling that, like, traveling between towns, that's the game. And you shouldn't want to skip the game. So if the game is at a certain point where, like, it's preferable to skip it, then you need to design a better game. It's like Death Stranding was probably at least one that I recall playing and going, it's just really fun to go from place to place, you know? And I mean, that's the whole game, right? It's delivering stuff.
Exactly. It's a walking sim.
Taking more stuff further in quicker times. And, you know, my partner hates me playing it because she reckons it's insanely boring.
Yeah.
But just, you know, getting your pack right, picking all your stuff you need.
Yeah.
Picking a good, yeah. It's like...
Need to weigh it properly, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's sort of similar to this Dragon's Dogma. It's like Death Stranding was the only game, one of the first sort of 3D games, like open world, that I remember playing and going like, oh, the terrain actually like really matters.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're playing like your Far Cry's or your Assassin's Creed or whatever, it's like if you want to go somewhere, you just go as fast as you can in the direction of that thing.
Wherever you want.
Very rarely do you have to like adjust your path. But in Death Stranding, it's like, you adjust your path about 10 minutes before you start and then you keep doing it. So I think that's a really cool thing about Dragon's Dogma. Like, I feel like they can afford to not have fast travel because traveling is the game.
Yeah.
Finding and new things is the game.
They've mentioned that is that they think, well, and when I say they are the developers, there was some early commentary that they made about the use of fast travel in video games these days and how it kind of detracts from, I guess, just the overall attention to detail that developers will put into their open world, because they tend to kind of, concentrate that attention to detail and maybe some of the environmental storytelling into certain areas that coincide with fast travel locations or whatever, which, you know, then kind of reduces your need to put an awful lot of effort into your open world games. And, I mean, we're kind of... getting to this point where the idea of open world becomes you just fast traveling to the closest point to wherever you want to go and then walking, you know, 100 meters or whatever. But I think with this, with Dragon's Dogma 2, they found this really neat kind of, again, just comes to this gameplay loop where I feel compelled to go and walk down that track even multiple times because shit's changing every time I walk down that track. Yeah. There's a fucking giant fucking ogre there this time. And, you know, last time there was all these scaly blokes like cruising around on the beach. And then, you know, well, you go at night and then fucking shit's completely different all over again, you know? So I think they've done a really good job of providing you with consistent variations in your expectations for that particular part of the game, which is, you know, just getting around. And if you can make getting around fun, like, fuck, all you got to do is just nail the story. And in my opinion, they're doing a pretty good job with the story. A little bit funky at the beginning where shit's just kind of all happening at once. You're like, what the fuck's going on here? Yeah, I definitely criticized, like, Starfield for having maybe a similar approach to narrative, but I do feel like they managed to wrap it up by the time you get to the first major city, which you might not be there, so I won't say anything about
I'm
that.
On my way.
Exactly. I won't say anything about story, but they do a good job of kind of wrapping that up in a bunch of quests that just feel really nicely put together. And I think that was one thing that caught me off guard a little bit is I was quite impressed with just the integration of the story with the quest line and you utilizing the game systems in slightly different ways to achieve your goals and stuff. Again, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil anything for anyone who hasn't finished it or, you know, hasn't started playing it yet. But I think it's just my expectations of RPG and what they're doing with it at the moment. They're not being completely upended or anything, but they're taking it in just enough different ways to really string me along. And yeah, I'm really enjoying my time with it. It's another thing is, Adrian, I feel like I don't have to just devote my every second of my life to this game because I feel like it's kind of one of those things where I feel like I'm going to have these mini adventures every time I load it up and go and do, like, I'm going to go into this quest and I can kind of piecemeal and bite-size those quests one at a time. Well, yeah, whereas,
the fact that you can just save it and whenever you want,
yeah,
like autosave, and then your proper saves come from finding a town and sleeping in an inn, means that, like, I was playing it earlier today and then I had to stop and do some other stuff, and, like, if I couldn't just save it then it would be like I'd be pushing myself to get to the next point.
Yeah.
Or abandoning that progress and never playing the game again. So it, like, you know, if you think about it, like, there's no fast travel in it, and some people might accuse them of that, of meaning that they don't respect your time. But they really do, because they're like, well, no, you can spend your time however you want. And if you need to leave, just save it and go. Come back. Yeah. You'll be right here. You know, but it's still rewards and reinforces that idea of, like, you are going from place to place. And so getting to a new place, that should be a big deal. Going to the inn and sleeping should be a big deal.
Yeah, and it is, because it also costs a shitload of money to go and sleep in the inn. I've noticed
that.
That
was like $3,000? I was like,
I know,
are you serious?
Dude. I was like, that bed better be fucking silken. I know. Crazy. Yeah. But one thing I will say again, kind of still going on this fast travel bit, is I think the reason that they've gone so hard on not, like, promoting you to fast travel too much is because, like, there's a lot that pushes you to try out all the different classes, and there's shitloads. I don't know how many exactly there are, but I've probably got access to maybe six. And you kind of find more as you go. So there might be more than nine. I'm going to guess maybe 10 to 11, maybe even as much as 12. But they do really promote you to try these different classes out and just kind of give them a bit of a crack, because it's so easy to change the pawns that you've got. You know, you have one main pawn with you that you can alter and give them a different kind of, job. Like, you probably want to stick to a fairly classic kind of build of healer, couple of DPS and a tank, for example, and it's very easy to switch that up on the fly every time you come back to a city. Like, you go and find a couple of extra new pawns, switch them out, change to your main pawn's job, and then you can change yours to whatever you like. It's very streamlined in that sense, and I don't feel like I have to sink an awful lot of time into the kind of, you know, come back to town, do all this shit, and then I can get back out again. But, yeah, just I think that whole approach to, you know, making the trekking and the trek itself fun and, you know, a useful part of the game, because you probably want to, you know, level up your vocations or whatever they're called, and and try them out.
And keep that variability, you know, the flexibility.
Yeah, exactly right. So, yeah, exceptionally fucking fun game. And there's just little things that I keep noticing about the game that I go, man, that's such a cool way to go about doing that. And, it's definitely not an Elden Ring, but I definitely am thoroughly enjoying my time with it at the moment. So,
I feel like you can't really hold the fact that it is an Elden Ring against it.
No, not at all. Because it's not what it's trying to do. Elden Ring.
Yeah, exactly. That's not what it's trying to do. You're right.
Yeah.
Something very different.
Exactly. But one thing that has kind of been getting around, Adrian, is that so some people incorrectly stated that Capcom basically tried to kind of sneakily bring microtransactions into this game, before the reviews and stuff came out. Since came out that microtransaction side of stuff was actually available, and a lot of reviews just didn't kind of mention it because they're too busy with the game. And I think it's also, before I sort of dive too far into that, I will say that, yes, there are microtransactions in this game, and it's turned a lot of people off the game or made them turn their nose up about it. And I totally get that, because the things that you purchase from this game are things like fast travel, fucking enablers, and ways to improve your chances at rolling stats on your pawns and all that kind of shit. One thing I will say is, since I've been playing it, is I've had no reason to buy any shit, because I've been very happy to, you know, enjoy the game systems that they're offering me. But also on top of that, I just feel like it's balanced to a point where I don't need to buy any of that extra stuff. So the actual microtransaction store so far has not really been useful for me at all. And then also, I actually have no idea how to get to the store. I've not had anything advertised to me at all. So I don't know about your playthrough.
I completely forgotten there were microtransactions now.
Yeah.
Because I read a little bit about that stuff a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, and that's a really good point, I think. The fact that how unobtrusive the microtransaction store is, I think, is a really good indicator of their feeling of microtransactions. Like, I don't know if you remember Diablo 4, when you'd like click on the store, it would like have your cursor hovering over the buy, the battle pass or whatever.
Yeah, so you could accidentally misclick it.
Yeah, it was a small thing, but it is extremely scummy.
They call it dark patterns, Adrian. Those are called dark patterns. Yeah.
But it's like, it's just so egregious. And not even that, I don't know how effective it would be, but just have your mouse cursor where it was, you know?
Yeah.
Just do that.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, Fortnite's done it, and Fortnite's been pinged for it.
Yeah. So people are going to buy heaps of your stuff, man. They're going to do it.
Yeah.
So just let them do it. You don't have to just ring every.
But then also, like, gamers are pretty fickle, you know, right? Like, you start doing shit like that, word gets around, and then people get angry, and then people start review bombing your shit. So it's like, ultimately, if people accidentally buy the thing, they're probably going to want a refund. So it's probably in your best interest just to make it so that doesn't happen. But
how much of your profits is that? What percentage of your profits is that kind of thing going to get you? Like 0.1, 0.01? I don't know.
Look, it would have to be basically fucking nothing, but
I think it just speaks to, like, the drive and the minds behind the game. If, like, a 0.01% increase in profits is worth doing that.
Yeah,
I think this kind of stuff, I think we can talk about a bit later as well, because I think one of the games we're going to talk about later on, I think, does a really good example, really good job with microtransactions.
Yeah.
But, I think, Dragon's Dogma, and have a good time.
Yeah, chef's kiss so far. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it just does enough different to be, like, really appealing.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I think even just kind of going back to that, the microtransaction stuff, you know, the other thing is if you don't like it, they've already got shit on Gamer Nexus, whatever it's called, the modding website that enables basically the ability to purchase the stuff that's generally only attainable through microtransactions in a – they've modded a you know, like a merchant that you can buy all the shit from, and also infinite save slots, which, again, I've not really had an issue with because I'm quite happy just having one save slot. So
yeah,
it's maybe –
consider that you can – change your class at will.
Exactly. I don't really see the need to have multiple things. I do think there's an element of people just enjoying to have a bit of a complain here and there. And, oh, like, look, 100%. Totally fucking exercise your will to complain. I totally fucking get that. But look, I don't think the microtransactions are as bad. And look, maybe one thing I will say is also having this conversation about microtransactions, I don't want to give them a green light because I don't like microtransactions in general. I just want to play a game and not have to fucking deal with that shit. So I hesitate to say not as bad as I've seen elsewhere because that's how things get bad over time. But I do feel like a lot of the reason they're even in this game is because of classic corporate fucking bullshit. But I just don't think that they would have been allowed to make this game without a microtransaction store. And I, because the first game didn't sell particularly well. So I'm, in all honesty, I'm fucking surprised this game even exists. And I think ultimately how they managed to get it in, because I think the main guy who created this was created Devil May Cry or whatever. And I think obviously this guy has just wanted to fucking do this game forever and wanted to get it cranking and managed to get it over the line. And probably one of the stipulations was, all right, we'll put a fucking microtransaction store in there, but it can't be in your face.
Yeah, and then, so he would have built up a bit of cachet, making Devils May Cry 1 through how many they are.
Yeah.
Which are all pretty fun.
Yeah.
And then he got to do this passion project. So, yeah, it's probably why it's a good game.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just got to, you know, lick the hand that feeds. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's it. Jurassic
Park. No biting. All right.
Spielberg does Jurassic Park, then he gets to do Schindler's List. That was all the stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. but I'm just thinking what else I had to say about this. Look, I think ultimately, like, I'm really, really, I'm exceptionally stoked with what this game has become for me, and I'm really looking forward to putting more fucking hours into this because, it's been a fucking pleasure so far. So you know what, Capcom, good on you. You know, I mean, it'd be nice if it didn't have microtransactions, but look, I get it. At least you're not making me accidentally sign up to a fucking battle pass. So,
or like, I always remember Rainbow Six Siege. It's like I bought that game because my mate wanted me to get into it. I bought it and I've got like two characters. And then all the other characters I've got to buy. And it's like, but I just gave you money. Where's the game that I bought? You know?
Yeah.
Same actually, thing for Honor, Ubisoft again.
Yeah.
It's like, just sell me the game, thank you. I'll buy it for me, then I'll play it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the issue is, and we've kind of spoken about this on the podcast before, is that there's too many games markets that have been purely rewarded from free-to-play pay mechanics that it's only ever going to bleed back into, you know, the more mainstream, but I mean, realistically, the casual games market makes way more fucking money than what any single-player video game does ever. So, you know, it's very difficult for these corporations that are all about making money to, you know, separate themselves from the fact that some games make lots more money. And how do they do that? By having these small little piecemeal payments that you can do to get a cool new helmet for, you know, 50 cents here and there. And, you know, a lot of those over time mean X dollars, right? And, we can make them pay full price for a video game and then also pay for that little cool helmet. Fuck, why don't we just do that? You know, and it's just, for them, so it's easy. A no-brainer. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, realistically, if people don't like it, they need to stop buying it. But they're not fucking stopping buying it because they're putting in these games, and that's the only reason they'd be doing it, right? So, you know, the trade-off of you know, the, I guess, overall sentiment towards these developers is virtually, it's not bad enough to warrant them not doing it, right? So
100%.
Keep doing it.
The money is there.
Exactly.
And I think, like, I mean, personally, I don't have, like, a problem with microtransactions inherently. I feel like it's all in the way that they're both advertised to the player and what they take away from the game.
Yep.
That's really the problem. And I think it's different for every game. And, you know, some publishers are much worse than others.
Yeah. I think you can, and I know exactly what you're talking about when you're talking about, like, I guess I'm going to put in quotations, good microtransactions, what we're talking about further on the show. But I think there is a way to bridge, you know, thoughtful microtransactions in a way that doesn't completely scumbag your player audience. And as there are examples. Exactly. Like, I think a lot of that just comes down to thoughtful games mechanics and having a game ecosystem where people might want to spend money on cosmetics and look a little bit, you know, different, you know, and that's fine, yeah. You know, because, you know, it costs money to keep these servers on. I remember Power World's server costs were fucking like $200 million or something ridiculous. Like, you know, these games are expensive to continue to run. And so if you have all of your money come at you in the initial kind of sales phase and then people are ongoing playing your game and you're having to maintain services, it's expensive. I get that.
Yeah.
You know, they need to, they need to keep these lights on. So, you know, if they want to do that, fucking go forth. Anyways, we've managed to turn this into a fucking microtransaction fucking episode. But, you know, is what it is. All right. Now, moving along, Adrian. PS5 Pro. Now, you've got a PS5, don't you, mate?
I do. I do have one.
You're a Sony, would you call yourself a Sony fanboy?
Nah, I think that I've had most of the, over my lifetime, I've switched pretty readily from console to console.
Yep.
I think I had an Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Had a 64, obviously.
Yeah.
Had a PlayStation the 3. Mm-hmm. You know, had a bunch. Just jumped back and forward. Random.
Yeah. It just kind of, I suppose,
PS5. And I like
it kind of comes down to whatever's going on in the generation, right? Like, I feel like all the ones that you've just mentioned have been the winners.
Like, yeah, you know what I mean? I think that's, it's like the, it's the exclusive, right? Like, I got the PS5 because The Last of Us 2 was coming out on. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And Deathloop. And so I was like, well, I got to buy this one, you know? And then God of War, and it comes out. Well, back then, I think it came out on the PlayStation. I was like, well, got to play that. You know, I got to play God of War Ragnarok. What will I do with myself otherwise? So I think like the big was a big reason between me getting a PS5 over an Xbox. I mean, I got a PC, a gaming PC that's okay, but I find as I get older, I have less and less time for fixing computers and calculating what parts I need to buy in what order. You know, so a PS5 for my old brand. It's much easier.
Yep. Yep. Well, look, it looks like we're getting another PS5, whether we need it or not. You know, time will tell.
Yeah.
But looking at the specifications that have recently leaked, so I'm just going to read these out word for word verbatim because, look, I don't really care about the teraflops, but people need to know. So it says that the CPU is apparently identical to the current PS5. However, there is a high-frequency CPU mode, which allows for an extra 10% juice. And then on top of that, the GPU enables faster rendering and higher-quality ray tracing powered by 33.5 teraflops. The standard PS5 offers 10.28 teraflops. However, I direct PS5 to PS5 Pro comparison would work out at around 10.28 to versus 16 to 17 teraflops. So it's all fucking garbo. But, you know, on top of that, they're also saying that there's some kind of AI super resolution upscaling thing that they've got coming out called PSSR, which is PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution Upscaling, that utilizes some machine learning shit. And on top of that, apparently it has a detachable disk drive and 1 terabyte of storage space. Basically, there's some minor changes. These aren't massive. And if we look at generation to generation changes and even like mid-generation changes, so for example, the PS4 to the PS4 Pro, this is a fairly meager jump in specs based on those previous generations. So a lot of developers are kind of coming out and saying, I don't know why this thing exists. Like apparently the PS5 is in its final, you know, trimester of its life cycle. We'll probably be looking towards the PS6, in which there's apparently already been rumors about. And so people are kind of scratching their head saying, well, fuck, why are they announcing this thing? What's its deal? And the big kind of rumor floating around is it's basically being put on the market as a GTA 6 machine.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. So the other thing I was thinking, is it possible that it's happening because there was something I heard, vaguely recall, about the PS5 chips being not made anymore or difficult to make or something like that. So maybe they're that middle gap that you're talking about, the pros or whatever, for each sort of console life cycle has maybe been brought forward a little bit, a year or two.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think there's probably a bit of a sum of all things happening here. I think we've probably hit that sweet spot in the console generation, like you mentioned, where the architecture's probably maybe slightly cheaper and they can squeeze a little bit more out for a similar, maybe slightly more expensive price point and put the pro wording on it. Also, the PS5 standard sales have dropped off significantly from memory. I think there were some recent articles in the last kind of few months about just the fact that, you know, globally sales on the PS5 have slowed down, which is natural towards the end of its life cycle because people already have it and, you know, whatever else. So how do you get people excited?
People buy it now,
Exactly. So, and some people do actually wait for the pro version of consoles in the mid-generation because that's just, you know, how they rock and roll. So you'll kind of capture those people, plus the people who, you know, are just those people who want to always have the latest console, so they'll buy the new one. But then, yeah, the other kind of side of the coin is the fact that, yeah, GTA 6 is probably going to be a pretty full-on graphically intensive game. Maybe there's some kind of communication between Rockstar and Sony about trying to get something out that is the fucking way to play GTA 6, because from memory, I think GTA 5 took a year or so to come out on PC. So if we're kind of in between this console cycle, maybe we need a little bit of extra juice just to make it look silky smooth. But I don't know about you, Adrian, like, if that is truly how they could go about, you know, marketing a console or whatever, I kind of just feel like it's a little bit scummy because now it's kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, here's GTA 6 and, yeah, it's fine on the PS5, but trust me, you're going to want to play on the PS5 Pro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I think that's probably – I'd say there's probably a fair bit of truth to that, that thinking, because GTA series is a massive game. Massive series, obviously, like, appeals to a great many people that don't necessarily play a lot of video games. Like, everybody knows about GTA. You know?
Yeah.
It's like cultural cachet or whatever is a lot wider than other games, you know? Possibly maybe the most famous one, or at least the most widely appealing. So it makes sense for Sony to go, well, you know, we jump on board with GTA 6. We give them a specifications or whatever they can use to make the game look incredible. They sell more games. We sell more PS5 Pros.
Everyone wins. Except the consumer.
And you've got, well, yeah, but I mean, you got like 40 more torn flops or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
There's a few flops in there.
I'll buy one. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah?
I'm going to buy one, I reckon, when it comes out. You going to
do it?
Well, maybe after. But yeah, because I noticed with Dragon's Dogma. I'll do something. I'll get it somehow. One thing I noticed with Dragon's Dogma is it's like, my feeling anyway with games, it's like Dragon's Dogma looks great, looks amazing. But for me, my preference is make the game look as bad as it has to give me just 60 frames a second all the time. That's all I want. You know? And I found I forgot about it once I started playing it. But when I first started playing, I was like, geez, it'd be good if this was just like a solid 60. You know?
Yeah.
Not that.
Losing a little bit there, Adrian. I think we lost a little bit of your.
I'm not big on graphics. I want it to feel smooth. You know?
Yeah, of course.
In my opinion, I want the game 100%. To constantly be the same.
Yeah, I've always been kind of the same, mate. You know, when it comes to graphical modes or whether you play the performance mode, I'm always going to go for the extra frames because I think, like, 100%. For me personally, the fluidity of the experience is way more important. Now, we'll say we spoke about it a couple of weeks back or whatever, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth's performance mode is fucking garbage to the point where it's like, you know, all the textures are super blurry just to try and squeeze out those extra frames, and it's 100% not worth playing. You may as well just play at 30 FPS and just have the game look nice. Obviously, I think there's definitely something to that argument, you know, Adrian, about just the fact that, you know, maybe we are hitting this certain point in the console generation where we're just not quite really able to maintain... Yeah, we just need a little bit more juice, just a touch more juice, and maybe the pro, you know, just a little bit more orange C, you know. So look, I'm looking forward to hearing the Adrian fucking review on that one then when it finally hits the deck. Apparently, there's going to be a really sexy new sleek design. You know, instead of it looking like a fucking, I don't know, like a like a heater you bought off.
It looks like
Tamu or some shit.
Like a humidifier.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what design they come out with next. So, but there you go. So, PS5 Pro, not sure when it's coming out, but I would, when was GTA 6 slated to hit the store's release date? Let's find out what that says. They're saying 2025, which is not this year. That's next year. So
November, late November, PS5 Pro. Yeah, okay. So maybe they will do a bundle when 6 comes out.
I dare say they might. Yeah,
might even be 2026 when it releases.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Are you a GTA fan, Adrian? Like, is that your vibe?
Nah, I mean, I like sort of tearing around, like when you're hanging out with your mates and you just, you know, throw the game up and drive around, cause as much carnage as you can.
Yeah.
I always found... For me, the narrative and sort of tone or theme of GTA was just not really... feels like it wasn't honest enough. They're always kind of winking at themselves and, you know? And I feel like it just undercuts what should be like a serious... Or at least I prefer it to be. Like, I thought Red Dead Redemption 2 was an incredible game.
Yeah.
Because it was serious. Like, you really felt for these characters in a bad situation and doing the best they can.
Yep.
And making mistakes and, you know, messed up things happening, but there was this real gravitas or, you know, authenticity to the writing and voice acting in that game. Although I am, I find it quite appealing, the idea of GTA 6, you play two characters that are in a relationship. I think that's a really cool idea. I don't think it's ever been, or at least no idea is kind of mine, if that ever been done before in a game. So that's cool to me. That's a really cool sort of narrative device that I think you could do a lot of fun stuff with. So I might find myself buying GTA 6 on my new PS5 Pro.
The whole Bonnie Clyde kind of, you know, narrative could be really cool. It'd be interesting.
It's a cool idea.
Yeah, how that might play into...
So much, you know?
Yeah, even just decision making and how much, I guess, variability there is in potential decision making and what effects that might have on the other person or vice versa. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with that game. I think Yeah. Again, I'm kind of the same. I always kind of felt like, I don't know, the whole kind of, and I'm just going to kind of loosely use the term gangster because, I mean, that's vaguely what they're going for, right, is, you know, the whole gangland kind of gangster war shit. I never really interested me to that degree. But I think you're right. Like maybe this one has a little bit more feeling and interest behind it. I think on top of that, again, you're 100% right. But not that it has to be realistic. But I feel like, you know, a more well thought out story that, you know, was rooted in some degree of realism would enable a better characterization. And, you know, personally for me, draw me in a little bit more because that's what I seek in a lot of video games is a good story. So,
it just needs like an emotional core. It feels like the GTA games never really have that. At least for me when I play.
I think maybe a little bit of San Andreas, you know, that had a little bit, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I did enjoy San Andreas. I thought they did it well then. I did enjoy that game. That was probably the last one I enjoyed, I think.
Yeah, I think when Big Smoke turns out to be the fucking bad guy, you're just like, dude, I trusted you, motherfucker. Dude, how dare you?
Man, God, that was betrayal. You know, I felt that. I felt
significant.
That.
Yeah.
Because he talked a big game, you know?
Well, I know. And he was your boy.
He was your scumbag.
He was your fucking boy, dude. Man. Fucking crazy, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's good. I mean, that's good content. That's good content.
Yeah. We need more of that. Need fucking more of it. All right, speaking of more. Adrian, give me the fucking skinny on Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection because I hear it is a fucking shamble.
Okay, so I didn't really know anything about Star Wars Battlefront. I never played the original when it came out because it came out in 2004. I was in Azeroth then, pretty much full time.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was probably somewhere there too.
Just that was what I was doing. So I looked it up. Yeah. It's a great idea for a game. God damn, what a fun game that would have been.
Yeah,
but from what I could find out, it's pretty much just like the old games, except that it's new. I don't think there's been any real sort of graphical or systems updates or anything. So it's basically like a port that didn't need to exist.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I've got a pretty bad taste in my mouth from the latest or the most recent Star Wars Battlefront.
Big time.
Similar sort of feeling towards, you know, like Rainbow Six or pretty much any game Ubisoft make. It's like, I already bought the game from you. How come I have to play for 40 hours to unlock Darth Vader? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, either make it free to play and then I have to pay money to get the stuff I want or pay time, which I'm fine with. Or make it full price, which it was, and give me the whole game, you know? And, you know, I think the problems that I was sort of reading about for it, despite that, my sort of ideological objections to it, it's just really buggy. Like, so, you know, because you can still play the original ones. You can still play those. And they work.
Yeah. I think you can still even use those services, like I can't remember the VPN service or whatever the fuck it is that you could use to create local games and stuff. But I think you could literally still use some of those like programs to run local games if you need to as well, you know, across the internet.
That's it. So it's like even beyond that, it's a bad idea because if you're reselling the same game, all you're doing is splitting the player base, right? Because the two games can't interact. The old Star Wars Battlefronts and the remaster or whatever it's called, Battlefront Classic or something, those players can't play with each other. So you've just split your player base already. So, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know why they did it. They should have taken the money they spent on this and they should have put it into Respawn making the first-person bounty hunter game, which is not getting released for some insane reason. It's like that's just going to make you $1 million, you know. And I say that sort of it'll make you more than that, obviously. But it just seems crazy to me that they made this game and then they didn't make that game. But then I was thinking about it, and it's like Star Wars Battlefront is like from a period of time where EA was actually sort of taking risks and making these kind of cool, interesting games, like, yeah, massive, you know, Battlefield style game, but it's Star Wars, and there are also Jedis and Sith and, you know, heroes in there as well. It's a great idea for a game. And yeah, it's sort of like you look at the kind of stuff they're doing now, and there's no way they'd make a game like this. So why'd they remaster it? You know? Or why'd they re-release it? It's like they're not willing to take a chance on Respawn, right? The guys who made Titanfall and Titanfall 2, and also Jedi Survivor and the other one. I can't remember his name at the moment. Those guys,
yeah,
to make a game in which you're a bounty hunter who was also a Mandalorian, it just boggles the mind that you wouldn't go, that's just a sure thing. That's going to make us so much money.
I mean, on paper, it sounds fucking great, right? And also the huge success of the fucking Disney Plus, you know, TV series. Yeah, it literally seems like a no-brainer.
The only explanation is that they don't know what they're doing. That's the only explanation. Because it would be, it just seems like, that's just free money in your hand. It'd be just go gangbusters. Like, there's so many demonstrations of why that would be a good idea. Obviously, all the games that Respawn make are good. The Mandalorian was one of the, in my opinion, few good releases from the sort of since Disney has picked up Star Wars.
Yeah,
and you'd have a jetpack, which is like, you know, that's $20 million right there, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it basically writes itself. But I think you're right, Adrian. And like, you know, we've seen this so much recently is that, you know, AAA gaming is so much more difficult to turn a buck than it is for small indie developers these days because of the inherent risk of the scale at which they need to pull off projects. And they're just not ready to do it. And that's why they're transitioning across to more kind of free-to-play, you know, games as service markets, because those seem to be the new hotness that definitely makes money, despite the fact that they fucking don't if they are shit, just by the way. Yeah. So, you know, I think EA are probably in a similar boat. Like I think Sony, as of like a year or so ago, they had something like fucking 20 fucking games as service games in development. They've scaled that back because of, you know, having to reduce their workforce. But, you know, that's where these larger developers are putting their time and effort, not into single player experiences. And despite the fact that we can see that, you know, if you put like, you know, enough time and effort in and you get the right team and yada, 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 you can create a Baldur's Gate 3. But I think the thing is that a lot of these companies just aren't willing to put that effort into hiring, put that effort into scaling a project and ensuring that it executes, because it's just, I think they just think it's too fucking hard. And maybe it is to some degree. I don't know. But yeah, it definitely seems like the Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection, you know, whilst not being a direct kind of comparison across all this, you know, I think ultimately it just kind of shows that, you know, EA and, you know, other similar companies are just kind of garbo at the moment in being able to, pull shit off. They really have nothing. They've got fuck all. Yeah, they've
got nothing, man. They've got nothing. It sucks.
Yeah.
They used to make good games. Now they don't. Now the games that make it bad. And it's
they've even
like, you know, sorry, what was that?
No, I was just going to say they've even gone as far to just, you know, utilize community made mods for their games in their remastered products without any attribution, which is, you know, okay, fair. A mod of a game that you've created, you might argue, is technically your property. Regardless, you'd think there'd be some degree of attribution, which they did not do for. For Battlefront, which there's reports that there's the Aspyr mod users, it is being utilized in this current thing. I don't know what the fuck the mod is, but you know they're using a mod that they didn't actually. Yeah. That's fucked up.
I mean, even if it's like perfectly legal, it's not moral.
Exactly. You
know? And there's a difference. And it's important.
Exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the answers other than execute every suit that lives.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the only. Yeah, beyond that, answer.
Let's move on real quick. I just want to smash out this one. So there's a Will Smith zombie game called Undawn, a name which sucks. It was made by, so it's published by Tencent, the guys that do a bunch of mobile games. They also do Path of Exile, which I did not know.
Yeah. Known for really good video game development strategies.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's developed by Lightspeed Studios, which is also another bad name. I checked out a bit of it. It just looked like real bad. It just bombed, yeah. Man. Like, I think it cost, I checked the numbers. It was like, cost $140 million to make. That was a budget. It took like 300 developers over like 4 years or 3 years or something like that. And so 1 year after release, the month of March, it made $257,000. So, I mean, that's not even close
you know? To the amount of money they spent on it.
Is in it maybe, or maybe he's just on the cover.
So here's the funny part about that, because I did a bit of diving into his appearance in this game, because obviously he's bankrolled some of it and wanted to get a game out, probably to do with the whole fucking I Am Legend 2 thing and maybe just trying to gain some general popularity back. Regardless, apparently he is in the game, but you have to get to a certain point in the game to find him, and he's kind of out of the way. And even then, it's not even him voice acting, it's someone pretending to be Will Smith.
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
Yeah. That explains it.
Yeah, it's just wild.
I really have nothing to recommend about it after having a look, except you can take baths. And that's pretty cool.
You can take baths in Red Dead Redemption 2, though, Adrian.
I know, and it's a great game.
Yeah.
So there's something there.
Yeah. Parallels being drawn.
Yeah. There's, hopefully 5 years from now, games won't be live service anymore, but they will always have baths in them. And you will always be able to bathe your character. You know, we can dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, if any community in this world needs lessons on how to on hygiene, it's probably the gamers. So, maybe more of that would be good. I feel for him, Will Smith. Not really, but it's kind of hilarious how badly this is done. But it looks just like the screenshots I've seen. It looks like one of those games you see on Facebook where it's like they show you a video of the game that's definitely not the gameplay at all, but it markets itself as gameplay, and it's like obviously a render of some shit that they made, and it just looks like fucking utter garbage. Yeah. And you should not play this game. Yeah,
It's one of those games. If you want to play a good zombie game, you should play Days Gone. I thought they did a really good job with that. Didn't sell very well. There'll never be a sequel. Yeah. But it really just it's good. You drive around a motorcycle, and there are a bunch of zombies all the time, and you shoot them. You know, just nice and easy.
Yeah,
I quite enjoyed that.
Tell you a really good zombie game is Dark Souls, fucking ripper. All I'll say.
That's full of zombies. Walk away. Yeah, that's a great zombie game for sure.
Banger. Actually, speaking of games with zombies in them, Baldur's Gate 3, Adrian.
Yep.
I mean, that's a fucking masterpiece. Let's be honest.
Dude, it's so good, man. It's crazy how fun it is. I played through it with a couple of mates, and we just did like multiplayer sessions. And it was hilarious, just the sheer amount of stuff you can do, the way the narrative branches, and just the combat is really fun and interesting. The voice acting is extremely good. The writing is extremely good. The characters feel like real people. They're pretty horny. That's cool.
Hey, it's fun.
It's just well done. Like, they just did good stuff with every part of the game. And then it took them ages to make, right? How long did they spend making it? Like 12 years, something like that?
Yeah, it's something ridiculous, 6 to 7 years. What's his name? Vin Swick or some shit. The main dog at Larian Studios. He recently did in his speech he mentioned that they've been working on the game for something like that. And just to kind of slightly deviate from our discussion, just the fact that drawing parallels of what he describes to be just corporate greed across all of fucking video game development at the moment, and kind of just championing that kind of narrative, and Just sort of saying that publishers have a lot to answer for in the AAA category, and just putting people's lives on the fucking line effectively because they can't manage projects properly and they're just willing to take a quick buck over just making stability and going from there.
Yeah.
And reading what he was saying, I was just like, man.
Instead of a cash grab. 100%. So why don't you do a good job?
Exactly. But, I mean, they're trying to take the – so the issue is, like, video games development and gaming in general, I think there's an inherent amount of creativity required, obviously, to create a product that people interface with and enjoy.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes from new experiences and new approaches to things that you haven't done before because, I mean, us as human beings, we look for new experiences. Yeah, exactly. And that's how we, 100%. I mean, when was the last time you went, holy fuck, that was an amazing movie? Probably because it had some element in that movie that you'd never seen done before or the story went in a direction. Exactly, you know. And so the more media that we're exposed to, the more shit that we do, we have less of that. And so when you have a game like Baldur's Gate come out and just fucking basically create a CRPG, which realistically, a good one hasn't been done in a very, very long time. I'll say that and probably bite my tongue. There's probably been some reasonable attempts, but let's just be honest. This game is like an Ocarina of Time fucking level of fucking video game. Like, this is crazy good.
If you're going to like name other good CRPGs that have been made, you'd be probably talking about like Divinity, you know? Like, you'd be talking about Larian
Exactly.
Bellic games.
Exactly. The earlier Baldur's Gates, you know?
Yeah, or the other Baldur's Gates. There was a couple of things in it that I thought were really cool and kind of showed the kind of difference in mindset between, like, Larian sort of developer/studio versus your EA publishers and your Ubisofts and that. And it's like I was watching it and they were talking about putting Speak with Animals into the game. And they were like, you know, Speak with the Dead. And they're like, okay, well, if we put this in the game, they're going to have to be able to talk to a lot of dead people. Like, we've got to have...
And take into consideration why that person's dead and how your character might have had something to do to that.
If we let people speak with animals, we're going to have to let them speak to all the animals because otherwise why do it? And that kind of mindset, like, sort of speaks to the kind of game they were trying to make because they were trying to make an incredible game.
Yeah,
they weren't trying to make a bunch of money. They wanted to make the best game that they possibly could make.
Yeah.
And so they did things like that. They allow you to speak with the dead, you know, and they write dialogue and get voice acting for every single person you interact with that's dead. Maybe you killed them, maybe you didn't. And the other thing that I thought was showed their kind of intent and the strength of their intent was that there was one item description I was reading and it was sort of saying, you know, this weapon... you know, explodes when it hits somebody or whatever. And then it said, furthermore, your attacks with this weapon always have advantage. And any other game that was not in like a D&D setting would probably have used the word additionally. But because it's old school, you know, medieval, you know, high fantasy, yeah, absolutely you use the word furthermore. You know, to use the word additionally would have been crazy.
Yes.
And so that kind of attention to detail.
That's beyond its time.
It's like, it's, you know, it wouldn't make sense. Why would you do it?
No.
It's like, you know, you ever heard that story or whatever about Van Halen when they were like a big band in the 80s? They had this part of their rider was that they, in every show backstage, they needed to have a bowl of M&Ms with all the brown M&Ms removed. You heard about that?
Yes.
Do you know the rest of the story?
I can't remember what there was like a reason behind it, and it wasn't because they had them or some shit. But
the reason, everyone sort of thinks about it as like, you know, rockstar excess, kind of like doing it because they can, because they're so big and so important. But it was actually done because the Van Halen stage show was like one of the biggest stage shows that had happened. Like it was bigger than stage shows that had come before. And they're doing it all over the place in all these different venues. And so the tour manager put that into the rider to know that if they went into the venue and they saw that there were brand M&Ms in the bowl, then they had to do like, they had to check everything. Because if they didn't read the, you know, conditions and requirements, accurately enough to do that, a simple task, then it meant that there's other stuff that they wouldn't have done.
Yeah.
So I thought it was like very clever, very interesting thing, you know? And I think it shows, like, talking about sort of Baldur's Gate, that little seemingly insignificant thing, using the word furthermore instead of additionally, is actually the reason why, or shows why the game is so good, because even to those tiny details, they got it right.
Yeah, and there's just many of those tiny details across the entire game, though, right? Like,
that's it. You know, yeah, they just hit it every time, all the time.
I mean, you talk about AAA's not being able to execute on a project. Like, I don't think there's a company on the planet that could have created the story tree that is Baldur's Gate 3 in terms of every single micro decision that you make in that game, whether it be story or player interaction, that somehow has some effect on the story and what that interaction means for resulting, you know, events beyond that and how those events interact with one another. You've got to think about it from a top level and how that branches downwards. That game is a literal masterpiece of humankind. Like, actually being able to, as a team of human beings, create that game is actually fucking incredible.
Yeah, just to have the cognitive capacity to visualize that, or to create even a
system
that
project
allows you to
that?
Visualize it.
How do you project manage that and have everyone on the same page?
I don't know. I mean, I couldn't do it. I absolutely, definitely could not do it. I know that much.
I don't think it's possible. I think this is a fucking...
Like that kind of branching narrative. Yeah, I mean, I very, very much doubt we'll get a game of that reactivity again unless sort of Larian make another one. Because it's something that you don't really see. I mean, Disco Elysium did it on a much smaller scale. But I think even sort of beyond that, like, you have those branching sort of narratives and, like, you know, branching paths and stuff. But the other thing is that they actually also matter for most of it, you know? Like, it's not sort of like, you know, seeing a different thing. It's like the characters are written so well that you become invested in the story. And so having those branching paths, that's, it's important now, not just for, like, novelty or replayability, but it's important because it's your story. Same thing with Disco Elysium. I've only played that game once. Tried to play it again, and I was like, it's not the same. Because the story was so good, but the way that I went through it, that's how it happened. You know. Yeah. And I think Baldur's Gate is because there's a bit more sort of customization and, many different classes you can play, different class configurations, different character configurations. It makes sense that you play that game again. But, it's just a triumph. It's just such an incredible game. I had such a good time playing it. Did some insane stuff. Like, I don't want to sort of talk about it because I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but, like, I just remember, like, several times in our playthrough just being aghast at what was happening and just going, like, how could this be real? You know, how could they put this option into the game?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, look, I kind of had this conversation with Grizz recently, and there's a couple of, like, I think they actually managed to have some moments in that game which were truly, like surprising in terms of narrative developments. And I guess, do you know what? Like, fuck it. Like, if you look, ultimately, sorry, there's going to be some spoilers in this part of the show. So if you're not interested in BG3 spoilers, maybe just, you know, hang out for 10 minutes and come back. But I think, you know, when you find out the identity, and I won't say it immediately unless you are happy for me to continue, Adrian, but when you find out the identity, for example, of the Emperor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you find out that he's fucking Baldur, and you're just like, are you fucking joking me? The Baldur. What the dude, that was insane, you know? And then further down the track, you find out that fucking Withers is the fucking, what is his name? Jurgle or whatever fucking name is, the original god of death.
Yeah, dude. It's just like these massive reveals, and that's like after so many other massive reveals, you know, to sort of craft a narrative that like allows you to do that, to experience that stuff and not have them guess those twists are coming because you're too busy
trying to piece everything else together.
Yeah, you know, stuff that's happening already, you know?
Yeah. There's so much shit in your periphery.
Yeah, you're just overloaded, right? You just can't think about it. I feel like they do that pretty well in Star Wars, in Jedi Survivor, you know, because there's a twist in that game, and, yeah, they just obfuscate it so well.
Yeah.
I was really quite impressed.
What was the twist? I don't know if I'll ever get around to playing that game, unfortunately. What was the big fucking...
So the thing is that you start off and you're, you know, whatever your name is.
Cal or whatever.
And this, Cal Kestis. And you get this mercenary dude called Bode who joins your team.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, and so from the very beginning, you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, this guy's got a kid that he's trying to take care of. And he's definitely going to betray us, you know? He's going to betray us for sure.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I've got that vibe.
You know, you go through, and then obviously that moment comes and he betrays you and you're like, yeah, okay, you know, cool. I saw it.
You saw this coming. Yeah, okay, thanks.
Yeah, it was extremely obvious. And then you play a little bit more and you're like, he's trying to do the same thing you're trying to do. So you end up sort of fighting him again. And, you know, you go and like you're – you're fighting him. He's using his blasters. You're like deflecting the bolts and stuff. And you go to like do the killing blow and he just force pushes you away. And the thing that they've been hiding the whole time is that he's a Jedi as well.
Oh,
and
shit.
And he's working for the Empire to hide like within there to keep his daughter safe. And from that moment, you're like, holy shit. Like, I did not see that coming at all.
Damn. Because wild.
Just, you know, they'd show me this, like, sleight of hand stuff. You know, this was doing the stuff. But the thing is, like, yeah, obviously you're going to betray me. You know, I'm a pretty savvy consumer of media.
Yeah, I know these things.
Yeah, when it happened, I was like, fuck, that is cool. That was very well done.
Fucking
and
twist.
Then it just fucking, it was sick, man. And then it just, like, adds that extra bit of, like, gravity to your fight, right? Because... now it's not just you versus some rando mercenary.
You're versing a fucking other Jedi.
There's like more. There's more implications to this. You know.
Yeah.
You've got the light side, dark side. Starts coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's really good.
So many good stories. I fucking love it. But unfortunately, Adrian, we're not going to be getting any more good stories in the Baldur's Gate 3/ Wizards of the Forgotten Coast or whatever the fuck it is realm Larian. Moving forward, as Sven Vink has noted that they're moving away entirely from the Forgotten Realms IP and Baldur's Gate in general. It sounds like Forgotten Realms tried to get them to continue utilizing the IP. I dare say, you know, I think Sven was quite diplomatic about it and has been on Twitter and stuff saying no, you know. Us releasing the IP and getting out of there is kind of a good move for Larry. And they've, you know, Forgotten Realms have been good dudes. And, you know, Hasbro have been good as well. But I reckon that's just kind of being Mr. Nice Guy. I am positive that there's probably some degree of expectation behind what was next for that IP and what they did next with it. And maybe Larian weren't 100% happy with what that would have looked like. But regardless, they're not going to be making another game in that universe next, if at all, ever again. Probably going back to Divinity or maybe a new IP. We don't know yet, but they are working on something.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm like, oh, that's good. Baldur's Gate 3 exists. You can play it. They get to do something new and fresh on their own terms with all the reputation they've now built off making one of the best CRPGs ever made.
Yep.
And we get to see what kind of weird stuff they're going to cook up, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think for me, like, the cool thing about Baldur's Gate 3 was not the fact that it was, like, set in Faerun or whatever in the D&D universe in much the same way as when I'm actually playing real D&D, tabletop D&D, sorry, I'm not really that concerned about
where we are, what it is,
you know, and what it is. It's like, all I really want to do is have good combat and good character moments, and it can be in any setting at all. And that's, you know, I mean, that's what you get. That's what really drew me to maybe enjoyed Baldur's Gate 3. It's like those really good combat and really good character moments. And
yeah.
Really good narrative. You know, and they can do that in any IP they want, really.
100%.
Because the themes of it and the bare bones of it are pretty much the same, you know? Just very hard to do.
Yeah.
With Swipe.
No, of course. But, I mean, if anyone can do it, it's probably Larian, right?
Yeah. I mean, they did it. They did it already, you know?
They've done it before.
Yeah, I remember, like...
I just think they're going to keep doing it.
They've done it before. They'll probably just probably do another one.
Yeah. Fuck it.
Yeah, I was... Dude, I was playing, you know, because I ended up in my multiplayer game, I ended up hooking up with Lazel, you know, so obviously she was a fourth member of our team from that moment on. It was hectic, man. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But there was this point, right, where we're sitting on the roof in Baldur's Gate, we're looking out, and she's, like, talking to me really earnestly. Like, she finally, like, let down the walls that she had, like, all the way through the game.
Yeah.
And then there was this dialogue option that I could say back to her. It was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. What a joke. And just the idea that you could go all the way through all this stuff and then just like, yeah, that you could do it. And I couldn't do it. I could not say that to her, you know, because we've been through too much.
Yeah.
You know, she's my wife.
Yeah.
But just the fact that they put it there, like, you know, I didn't click, I couldn't. I wonder what you say, but I don't know, man. I don't want to know.
Just the fact it existed was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, man, I went full shout out. I was obviously getting
a fair bit of pressure. Yeah. I'll be getting pressure from the boys to be like, do it, man. It'd be so funny. And I'm like, dude, that's offensive to me. How dare you?
Yeah. You're going to talk about my wife like that? What the fuck?
Yeah, you can talk about, you know, love my life?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Disgusted. You would
turn
even ask.
On PvP mode. Yeah. So, I mean, that's good writing. You know, I think that's good writing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Adrian, can you see, I mean, obviously, you know, Larian aren't really going to be doing an awful lot with the IP anymore, but fuck, what do Wizards do next? What do you think they do with the IP?
Just make D&D that you can play on the internet with your friends. Just make an engine that allows your dungeon master to drag and drop things and build encounters without having to spend $1 million on minifigs.
You know?
Like, they've got Roll20 and people use Roll20 constantly, even though at least I find it to be insanely janky.
Make a good version of it.
People to use. Yeah, you can just make a
sick marketplace.
Yep, make a sick marketplace, take a cut, get these people 3D model it. You know, you've got your basic, you know, you'd probably get your in-house artists or whatever to do all the proper stuff, sell minifig packs online that don't physically exist but cost a little bit less or are the same. It just seems like a no-brainer. Yep. It just seems like such an easy way to lower your overheads and increase the amount of people that are playing your game.
Yeah, and you know if they create that, Adrian, they are not going to be charging less for those fucking digital versions. So they're going to be charging the exact same fucking amount, which is just ludicrous, you know? They already do that with the fucking player handbook.
Oh, dude, yeah. It's like you're not being able to convert your physical copy to also get your digital copy. Just sort of like, well, I guess I'll just never use the digital thing ever because I'm
physically constrained,
you know? So, yeah, my friend was playing a game with his mate over in Melbourne over VR, and it's basically like that, just Dungeons & Dragons. Like
sick.
I can't remember what it's called. Bless me.
Not Demios or something?
Demios, that's the one, I've played a bit of that, and it was cool. And it's like, well, why don't they just do this with D&D?
Their brainer. You know,
it seems like, I'm trying to think of an analogy, but it's like getting Respawn to make a first-person shooter in which you're a Mandalorian bounty hunter. You know, it's like that.
Yeah. Just. Well, I mean, if that's the metaphor, then we know the answer is it's obviously going to cost too much money.
That's the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, all right. Here's my guess at what they do with the IP. They create a 6v6 hero shooter in the style of Overwatch, and it is utter fucking garbage.
Yeah, but it's turn-based.
Yeah.
It's D&D.
Yeah.
actually.
Probably. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. We'll find
maybe
out.
Maybe something that sucks. Because yeah, the thing it's is, it's not the IP that matters. It's the people that make the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll suck.
Yeah. And you know that you Tencent is going to fucking get in there as well.
Yeah, totally. Playing on your mobile.
Yeah. It's coming. It's fucking coming.
Colgate toothpaste.
Mate, yeah, it's not going to be good. Now, but speaking about things that actually are good and something that you've been fucking thoroughly enjoying, as far as I'm aware, bit of hell diving, bit of getting in there.
Oh, yeah, I've been diving a lot.
Yeah. You've been getting in?
I think it's a great game. I think it is excellent.
Yeah. Now, give me your, what is it, Adrian, that you think sets, I mean, because, you know, we kind of spoken a bit about Helldivers on this podcast last time. And I mean, it's obviously really, I mean, I think it's very much exceeded expectations. I mean, it's sold well and truly over 8 million copies or something ridiculous. It's like one of the USA's best selling games of the year. You know, it's just fucking cracking it. And, for the most part, like the Helldivers IP is fairly unknown. The first game, I think, went reasonably well, but it was a top-down shooter that not an awful lot of people knew about. You might have just kind of ran into it with a bunch of mates and kind of went, oh, let's give this one a crack, and maybe played it for a weekend and left it there. But this game has gone fucking great guns. So why? Why, Adrian? What is it about this fucking game?
I think, first and foremost, it's really fun to play. The gameplay itself, the gameplay loop, is really good. It feels good to shoot things with the weapons that you get.
Yeah, but it's like the Destiny effect.
Yeah, very much so. But there's also like so many things that they do that's like the best or one of the better ways to do it, or like a really good example of that being done. So it's like the world building that they do, I think, is excellent. You're obviously a Helldiver fighting for Super Earth, which is it's got this really very sort of thin, very thinly veiled Starship Troopers reference that permeates the whole thing. But they've also got that same sort of satire that exists in the first Starship Troopers of this like sort of dystopian world that seems like paradise. You know, these like real powerful themes of patriotism and government misinformation, and all of this is just like done with a straight face, but the satire is obvious. Just like using the satire is obvious, you know, especially nowadays. It was a bit different when Starship Troopers first came out. But, you know, like, and everybody gets in on it. Like, you get tweets from the developer of the game. And he's tweeted, you know, this is previous to one of the recent events. He's like, I've heard rumors of flying bugs in Helldivers 2. I want to officially refute such preposterous claims. Everybody knows that bugs can't fly. And I'm not alone in thinking this. The Ministry of Truth agrees that this is propaganda from bug sympathizers that want to brainwash good people. Hashtag lies.
Ministry of Truth.
That's a lot of fun, you know, because that's the developer.
It's a bit of a Trumpism, really, isn't it? Like, it kind of has that same kind of 100%. Vibe. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's just this, blatant misinformation.
Yeah.
But then he posted this other, you know, obviously bugs can fly because a bunch of bugs can fly now, and they just, you know, they're hard to kill.
Confirmed.
And his thing is like, then he posts this tweet, and it's like, I've always believed in the possibility of flying bugs, you know, but there is no chance that these flying bugs have created some sort of mutation from our release of from our deployment of the Terminator control system, you know, which is just like you had to want for part of the game, you know, for a period, you had to go do this mission where you had to like power these silos that spewed poisonous gas into the air to poison all the Terminators. And so obviously as this is happening, you're like, this is, you know, obviously the bug's going to mutate. And he's like, you know, we know that bugs evolve very quickly. So I shudder to think what might have happened had we not deployed the Terminator control system.
Definitely, you know? Not related.
And it's just got that like perfect tone of this, like, government misinformation and mistruths and revisionism that exist in these kind of dystopias, of which the United States seems to be going down that path, in my opinion. But I'll stay away from that. The other stuff is the battle passes are done in a really cool way. We were talking about microtransactions earlier. With Helldivers 2, you get one free battle pass at the beginning. Everybody gets it. And then you can buy new battle passes for like 15 AUD, so like $4, something like that. And you end up... But the thing is the battle passes never go away. They stay there forever. You buy them, they're yours. If you don't buy them, they're still there. You buy them when you want, you know, which is like the closest thing I compare it to is Destiny, when it's like you've got, you know, 12 weeks or something like that, maybe, or less per season. And if you don't play that season, then you miss out on those weapons.
And which sucks.
You can't earn any other way. Yeah, it's crazy bad because it's like I used to play a fair bit of Destiny 2. I still play a little bit with my mate. But you sort of jump into it halfway through or towards the end and you're like, well, I just missed out on a ton of these weapons. So... You know, if you have any sort of like completionist tendencies or anything.
Or just the anxiety of like, you know, that FOMO, you know, which is shit. Yeah. It's a terrible way to entice people.
It's a shitty thing to do to exploit people's fears.
And, I don't know about you as well, but that puts me off video games. And I wonder 100%. How many people feel the same way and where the developers realize that that's like a not very, like it's abrasive.
Yeah, well, and I mean, we're seeing it right now because it's one of the reasons why Helldivers is such a big fucking deal that everybody's having fun with, because it respects your time and understands that you have other stuff to do and doesn't have to force. It's like we're talking about Dragon's Dogma. We're saying Dragon's Dogma. It doesn't have to force you to play the game because you want to play it because the game is
good. Yeah.
You know, Dragon's Dogma 2 doesn't force you. You can't fast travel, but that's not a problem because traveling around by yourself is fun.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the core of the game, right? The game is fun to play. But with each of these things that they do, they just sort of make these decisions that seem like it would be suicidal for a company to do it. But in actual fact, it turns out that it's probably the best way. The other thing that they do that I think is really good, they don't have a roadmap. They don't have, I think they had one, but then the game was so wildly successful that they had to redo it. So they took their roadmap down. They're like, we'll post another roadmap when we figured it out, but they haven't posted anything. And honestly, I think that's preferable because when something comes out, it's a surprise. Like one of the major orders was to go liberate this automaton planet because they were building these new mechs. And the community banded together and fought the bots for ages and eventually liberated this planet before it was up. And then everybody got the new mech stratagem, where you can drop down an actual mech, get into it, and shoot things. And for a while, every time you dropped in Helldivers, you had access to that mech, you know, before it was sort of relegated to your stratagems, where you had to purchase it with requisition tickets. And they just keep doing that. Like, the flying enemies were just dropped in. Like, I was playing the game, and then one mission I dropped, and there were just flying bugs now. And it like gives you this feeling of like you're just a soldier in this world, this conflict that's engineered by the elite in order for them to make money. And you don't have much information because it doesn't matter if you get information or not because they don't care about you. You know, they tell you that this stuff is important and that you're doing your best protecting people's lives. But in actual fact, you're just like making money for other people. And so like, all of these things link together in this perfect way, like the tone of the game and the satire of this like sort of autocratic society that calls itself democratic. And that ties in with the way that you have no information really, like about when things are going to happen, which ties into why I think it's good they don't have a roadmap. The guns you get, the information you get on them is pretty bare bones, which is, I think, is good because it just means that in order to figure out if you like a gun or not, go and shoot a bunch of bugs with it.
And yeah, if you think it's effective, feels.
Then keep shooting bugs, you know? Like, I feel like there's a tendency to give players as much information as possible, but I don't think that that's a good idea because, notoriously, people are very bad at making decisions that are in their best interest. So the more information we get doesn't necessarily mean that we're making a better decision. It's more important that we get in there and just have it, like, feel it out. And the other thing that would only work if the guns that you get are all pretty well balanced. And for the most part, they are. There was been a couple of nerfs so far and a couple of buffs, but I feel, at least myself, that all the guns are pretty balanced. They all do different things, and they, you know, change depending on, they're more valuable, less valuable, depending on what planet you're on and what enemy you're fighting, and also what everybody else in your squad has. So it kind of gives you this flexibility to really play the game how you want to play, or, you know, how you think is the best way to play it, without really having a sort of meta that you kind of have to do. And I think the reason that works is because it's a PvE game. There's no PvP. You kill each other, and oftentimes it happens, but it's like fun instead of extremely stress-inducing. And because it's a PvE game, you can really have these kind of things happen that you couldn't if there was any kind of PvP. It's like, I feel Destiny 2 is kind of ruined by PvP because almost nobody plays it, but it exists in there now. And so PvE decisions are made based on PvP. Same thing happened with World of Warcraft. Yep. You know, PvE
100%.
Gameplay was affected by PvP existing. I think it's excellent. I think this is just really well done. And I think it shows, you know, shows people that this kind of games as a service can be done correctly. And I think it involves, like, a little bit of, like, sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like a bit of generosity, I think, and a bit of respect for people's time.
Yeah, and even respect for their brains, you know? Like, I feel like developers just treat people like fucking idiots sometimes with the way that they tutorialize things. And but it's almost like tutorialization for tutorialization's sake. And I do find that, you know, and again, talking about Dragon's Dogma, like, there's a lot of things that are just kind of not really discussed and you just kind of figure out. And I think, you know, Helldivers has a similar thing.
Big time. There's heaps of stuff, like these little things that pop up, like one of the secondary objectives, you can, you know, take over the artillery, the SAAF artillery, right? You know, you load the shells in, and then you connect it to your super destroyer. Now you have, like, another strategy you can call in. But the way the shells come out is the exact same order that you loaded them in. So if you make a choice to load it with, like, smoke and you really need that thing to die, well, you'll probably just fire the smoke at it, you know? It doesn't tell you that. It doesn't tell you what's coming up next. It's just, like, that's the way they went in. That's the way they come out. So you actually have to make, like, a little mini choice when you're doing that. You know, what are we going to need? Because they give you more shells than you can fit into the artillery. So you kind of make a little decision there. What do we need coming up, you know? And also, what order did they go?
Yeah.
Which I think is very cool. And that's that idea of, like, they're not giving you all the information. It's like a design choice rather than a lack of effort or a lack of understanding.
Yeah. Or just, like, oversimplification of systems as well, you know? Like, you know, to the point where, like, the inferral of, like, what you should do is just completely obvious to, and it's not fun, like, because it's like, well, I've done this in many games, like, why should I be bothered right now,
the same thing.
Yeah,
and that's why I find, like, the game is still really fresh, even though I've probably played about 100 hours, I reckon. It's still really fresh, and I still find myself, like, if I'm playing some Helldivers and then I've got to do something else, I'll just you know, stop playing.
Yeah.
I don't have that desire to, like, go, well, no, I've just got to finish this mission so I can get, you know, these samples, or I need these medals. It's like, I just sort of feel like I'll just get the medals the next time I play the game. I already had a good time, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, only works because the game itself is so fun.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, you're playing a dungeon in Destiny or whatever, and you have to leave, it kind of sucks, but, you know, that's a bad feeling because it means the only reason you're doing this is because you want some shiny gig, or which is, like, the opposite of what you should want to do when you're playing a game. You should want to play the game, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Balance with it.
Yeah, is and it comes back to that whole idea of, like, is the game loop itself fun, or are you just chasing the final reward all the time?
And that's it, that dopamine burst.
Exactly. Yeah. And if the dopamine's only coming from, you know, 2 seconds of opening a chest, like, fuck, you're wasting your time, right? Like,
yeah, that's it. Yeah, you didn't make a game, you made a Skinner box. Whereas exactly. You know, when I play Helldivers, I get dopamine every time I kill a bug.
Yeah.
Or blow up something. Or dive away from an explosion and spend a cool way. You know,
yeah.
The game is just full of these cool things that you do.
Moments.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's really fun. It's really good.
Yeah, me and Gris played it a little bit, probably the second week or so after release, and we haven't dived back in since, just because I think, like, at the time we probably need to give it more time to really coalesce, and I think also, you know, our schedules just are not conducive to an awful lot of multiplayer gaming, so unfortunately didn't quite resonate with us an awful lot, but looking at what it's kind of providing, and I think the way it is utilizing its community to really sort of self-feedback loop its own momentum, which I think is a really important part of a game as a service, by the way. I think it's probably one of the most integral parts realistically because, you know, the only way to make a successful game as a service is by having a good community. And how do you have a good community if they're a part of the actual fucking game? Which a lot of games these days aren't. You know, the developers just take them whatever direction they feel like and then just hope for the best or just completely ignore their player base. But it seems like these guys are doing some really, really fucking cool shit, and it's great.
That's an interesting point. Like, I just thought about Dan. In Helldivers 2, anytime anything happens, it's because you dived onto a planet and killed a bunch of stuff and blew a bunch of stuff up. Whereas, like, in Destiny 2, there's all these other characters around. And then you do something rad, but because you're technically one of many, even though you're a unique character, you can't really do anything. All the stuff is done by other characters, and other NPCs. Whereas in Helldiver, you're essentially an NPC because you're this faceless, like, clone or froze, like, cryogenically frozen soldier. And every time you get launched in, like, in canon or whatever, C-A-N-O-N, you're a different person because the default voice setting is randomized. So the idea is not that you're coming back again and again. You're just another one, just landing on the ground, dying instantly to a bug or being blown up by a rocket or being knocked from the rocket onto another rocket, which knocks you to a third rocket, killing you. You know? So I think, like, it's not certainly like almost the success of that game or the success of you as a player is actually the success of the community. Because no matter what you do, the way the whole game is designed and built, you are a faceless grunt.
Yeah.
Just like the other three guys. And so that idea, it only works if you're a community because there's actually nothing to distinguish you.
Exactly. But even going back to that Destiny 2 metaphor that you were talking about earlier is the approach that Bungie's had to raids has always been like once the world first raid is completed by a team of 6 people who their entire life is all dedicated towards playing video games, you know, which is quite a significant deviation from what the majority of the rest of the community is, probably people who work full time and people who just play the game for fun. Once those 6 people who have the privilege of being able to do that as a full time job or fucking whatever else complete the raid first on your behalf, that's when you get the cool, you know, the video or whatever else it is that is like, you know, the lore tidbit post raid. And I think that's like, it's not a great community vibe because it's like, oh, cool. You know, 6 guys that, you know, are really good at video games have just completed the raid. Congratulations, guys. Like, you know, whereas with Helldivers, it's like, oh, everyone came together, everyone killed a shitload of automatons, and we've now got this sick new mech. Wicked.
Yeah, something new. We got some weapons, you know. We got, it's really cool. It's just really clever way of making a game by, like, integrating the actual gameplay into the narrative in this way that is seamless, you know. I mean, I've still got some problems with the crossplay. It's just absolutely jank, man. It just does not work. I can't really play with any of my friends on PC because it just crashes.
So who's a crash for, you or them?
It depends who's hosting. So if it's like
PC players hosting all the... I think I'm probably the only PS5 player that plays with my friends because they all have computers.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's like it's really, really... It's like impossible to get it, like string a few missions together without crashing out. And then, you know, you come back in and you can't join the squad because you're technically still in the squad. So you've got to wait till the server realizes that. And then,
God.
Then you can jump back in so you can crash again. It's like, it's a living nightmare.
Yeah.
But because I really want to play Helldivers with my friends, you know? Because the game's
Yeah, great. I mean, and that's the idea, right?
In like a coordinated squad, yeah. But that's my, I mean, it's a big concern, but I've still played a shitload of Helldivers.
Yeah.
So it's not, the game is so good that I'm willing to tolerate this in order to shoot more bugs and or bots.
Yeah.
With a variety of different weapons.
Yeah, fuck yeah, man. I love it. I'm going to get back into it, Adrian. I'm going to do it. I need to finish Dragon's Dogma 2. I then need to also finish Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I need to sell my soul to Balantro because that game, and I'm not going to get enough time to talk about it this episode, but holy fuck, that game is probably my favorite roguelike of all time, I actually think. I actually don't think there's anything better than it, and that's fucking, I know it's a big call to make, I know. And I love Slay the Spire, don't get me wrong, but it's a completely different itch. And the way that it utilizes fucking just poker and on the surface seems so fucking simple and boring. But when you get in there, oh my God, that game is a fucking masterpiece. And it's, I don't know what else to say about it. But yeah, unfortunately, we don't have time for it this week, but we got to dive into the old rapid fire. But yeah, goddamn, it's I'll get back into Helldivers, don't you worry, and I'll fucking hit you up. Hopefully they will fix fucking, what do you call it, cross play by then.
Yeah, they're working on it. They reckon it's quite a problem for them.
Yeah,
trying to solve. I think that they were honestly like completely blindsided by the sales. I think they expected like 50,000 people to play it, and they had servers that had capacity of 250,000. That's like, you know,
that'll
absolute, you know, best case scenario. People playing that game, we probably about 250,000, and it was like a million or something like that, like straight out of the gate.
Yeah, so, I mean, the architecture and infrastructure they need is completely different to what they have planned for, like, which would be immensely difficult to correct.
And it's like, it's that thing. It's like, I remember, you know, with Valheim when it came out, it was like this massive smash hit, and then there wasn't much content coming out. And they're like, you've got all this money, just make all this content. And it's like, well, you still got to hire people. You still got to onboard them. You still got to, you know,
create,
organize them. You still got to manage this project that's now gone
test,
from 7
QA.
People to 30 people, 50 people. You got to test it. You got to QA it. It's like, you know, it just doesn't, you know, money's not like fuel that you just doesn't convert like instantly into production. You know, there's still a bunch of stuff that real human beings with lives, families, you know, certain biological necessities, just sleep and food, sunlight.
Yeah, humanity,
you know,
is just full of impatience, unfortunately.
So I'm happy to wait. I wish it wasn't the case because this game is so fun. But yeah, it's got to do it. It's got to do it. It's not what else I can do. You know, what am I going to not play Helldivers? Unacceptable to me.
No, it's not going to happen. You're not going to do that. And
no, I'm not.
Yeah.
I won't.
Look, I will join you. I will join you. It's going
to
happen.
Good. I look forward to it.
All right. Well, mate, let's fucking we have fucking prattled on about some fucking things tonight. God, it's been fucking great.
True.
But we need to dive into the final part of this show, the old rapid fire news.
Rapid fire news brought to you by
DJ Francesco.
It's in the freaking game, Adrian. I'm going to belt through all these, and we might stop for a couple of cheeky roadside chats about a couple of these as we go. But firstly, mate, insanely radical, all of the Super Mario Maker 1 player-made levels have been completed by maniacs, literal fucking maniacs, just before the servers were shut off. So, yeah, essentially Nintendo was shutting down, I guess, the servers for this, and someone or a couple of people said, we're going to play every single player-made level that exists and complete them all before that happens. And they did, which, yeah, harkens back to the old.
That's actually, you know, insane. People.
It is. It's literally crazy. So fucking well done.
It's like not only is like there a bunch of levels, but those levels are made with malicious intent. You know.
Yes. Yeah. Like, and some of them are just insane. Like literal, like masochist level shit in terms of difficulty spike. It's just insane.
I remember watching Grizzly Dawn, and I was just like, "Fucking hell, man!" Like, I couldn't believe he was doing it. You know.
Yeah.
Kudos to Grizzly for having those kind of platforming chops, because.
Yeah.
It made me feel sick with fear.
Yeah. Just maybe it makes you worry for him, you know? Yeah, his mental fortitude.
Worry for Grizzly or worry for the person who made this level, you know?
Yeah, and you personally. Yeah, all right, moving along. It seems, Adrian, that the all Adult Swim games are going to be removed from storefronts by May of 2024, confirmed by developers. So, that's a bunch of different games. One of them off the top of my head was Duck Game, which you may or may not remember, platforming kind of game, just a real fucking cracker. But, yeah, just seems like there's a bunch of games going to be dropped off. So it won't mean that you won't have access to them if you already own them, but you just won't be able to buy them anymore. So there's also this is another fucking incredibly good roguelike game, Kingsway. Check that one out. It's kind of this game. Oh God, it's like a trying to think of the whole idea is it's like a old school RPG kind of like low UI kind of deal, but all of the shit that happens in that game is like Windows 98 pop-ups that happens on your desktop computer. And so like you'll be traveling around and you'll be trying to manage your inventory, and then a goblin attacks you and it pops up over the top of your inventory management. You're trying to sort that goblin out in this side window, and then you're trying to do other shit in another window. And it's a really, really fucking good game. And if there's anything I can recommend that people buy before this goes offline, is that game. It is a cracker. Really good. So,
yeah, that's good.
Get that one in you. All right. Now, speaking of 6v6, shooting games, harkening back to the potential for a Baldur's Gate 3 6v6 shooter, Overwatch will finally stop locking new heroes behind battle passes in Season 10, which I think is probably a good indication of how that game's going. Not very well.
They're willingly giving up money. There mustn't be that much money.
Yeah. I don't know if you've opened up that link there, Adrian, but when you look at the Polygon article inside it and you see the like developer update, and it's just like this, you know, probably the lead developer and he's smiling as if he's got a fucking gun behind him in his back. Like, it's just like fucking up. Yeah.
Someone's pointing a gun at that guy.
Just blink for twice, my friend.
Are you okay? Children are just out of frame, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Tell him it's going to be okay. All right, John? Tell him it's going to be okay. but, yeah, so look.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's not good. What now, continuing on from that story, a possible reaction to Blizzard reportedly cancelling all of its PvE offerings in relation to Overwatch, which has been apparently cancelled due to poor sales, which, I mean, fuck, understatement. I mean, people just don't like the game because you fucked it, basically. So, you've done the same to Diablo now as well. It's just, it's a consistent fucking bad fucking juju, man.
At some point,
man,
you've got to start making
good
games instead of bad ones. Yeah.
Yeah. My how.
Obviously, it didn't need to exist. Why does it exist? No.
Really didn't. Moving along.
That's the way of it.
Well, exactly. NetEase are going to try their hand the Overwatch formula, my friend. 6v6 Overwatch-style shooter in the Marvel Universe. So they recently released a trailer, had all your fucking favorites, Mr. Doom, Dr. Doom, sorry. Well, maybe. I don't know. I might have just made that one up. But definitely had Doctor Strange in it, Black Panther, Iron Man, Spider-Man, a bunch of other fucking people, Rocket Raccoon or whatever his name is. And, yeah, it just looks like Overwatch, but it's Marvel, and they're doing fucking, you know, Overwatch-style shit. So, yeah, maybe slightly jankier. Yeah. But, I mean, it could be good. You know, it could be.
It'd be insanely fun to play as Spider-Man in a level, you know, like. That'd be good, but it won't be good. That's the thing.
It won't be. Yeah. And, I mean, like, are you a Marvel guy, Adrian?
No, I think that the Marvel movies are just soulless, cookie-cutter garbage. That it's offensive that there are so many of them. There are two good ones.
Yeah.
Both made by Taika Waititi, Ragnarok and Love and Thunder. And Civil War was pretty good, but the other ones are not good. My opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely don't mind the old Guardians of the Galaxy. But I mean, that's pretty much where I stop.
They're good, actually. I forgot about those.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of forget that they're even Marvel movies because they're kind of just a sci-fi fucking, you know, movie. But yeah, the rest of them are just completely not interested.
None of the characters in it. I think that's probably why they work. None of the characters are. Like, you're just sort of Marvel Max.
Superheroes?
Yeah. I mean, not even. It's like, I had no idea who Star-Lord was before it came out. Gamora, no idea. Drax, no idea. Rocket Raccoon, nope. No. So, you know, they come out and they kind of have a bit of freedom. It's like you always want to be like the B tier, I think. That's where you get the good stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Andor, for example. Incredible show.
Yeah, they have to work a little bit harder to make it work.
Yeah, your Rogue, your Rogue One. No one's got Jedi's in it. It's not your big players, so you get less suit attention, and then you can do stuff that is interesting and good instead of stuff that's bad and sells. I think that's what it is. Right. In my opinion, again.
I think you're 100% on it. That's 100% that's what it is, big time. All right, so next, mate, Apex Legends World NA Finals have been postponed following a massive security hack dude, I don't know if you've seen the fucking video of this shit, but it's wild.
Yeah.
Basically what happens is some dude gets hacked live on stream, and literally what happens is some hacker has hacked into the fucking finals servers and injected hacks into one of the finalists' computer. It's wild. Fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's outrageous.
So we're, like, it is like insane and kind of scary. So, yeah, you'd be fucking spewing. But, yeah, so they're postponing that. And the final one, Adrian, not a big surprise, GameSpot seems to be seriously suffering with sales decline leading to job cutting to control costs. I don't know. I kind of get the feeling that most people are probably buying a lot of their games digitally these days. I know I am. I don't know about you, mate, but... it's just a lot more convenient. Even, like, on so many levels.
God, it's so much more convenient, man. Like, I'll buy a game physically if it's like on special.
Yeah.
Or if I've got a bunch of JB Hi-Fi badges or something. But like,
yeah.
For the most part, even if it's more expensive than it is in the store, I still don't have to go to the store.
Yeah.
That's worth money to me.
Yeah, it's a fucking win-win, isn't it?
Premium. I have to leave my house.
Yeah. But even then, it's generally not that much different, you know, like EB Games tends to put a bit of a premium on their prices, and it's kind of just almost rude in some ways. It's like, dude, you're a fucking games wholesaler and you're charging me more, whereas like JB Hi-Fi are just selling everything and charging me less, and it's just, you know, a bit ridiculous, personally. That's how I feel. But
it just doesn't really seem to be a point to buy a game from a game store rather than anywhere else that sells games.
Exactly right. A bit rude overall.
Probably the root of the problem.
But speaking of rude overall, that's the end of the show. That's it. Finito. Done. Adrian, thank you for joining me for 2 hours, mate, and talking shit about a whole bunch of different video games. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here, mate. It's been bloody wonderful.
That's great. Thank you for having me. I had a blast.
Oh, mate, bloody ripping. We will have Grizzly Gaming back next week, so, you know, pull up your socks and get ready for a bit of the Grizzler. And Adrian, we'll definitely have you back again, mate. We'll bloody thoroughly enjoy these chats. Now, for everyone at home that would like to find us, you know, wherever, you know, OGR.show, that is our website. You'll find all of our, you know, links there. You know, we've got our Twitter on there, our YouTube, our Facebook, Instagram. We got bloody TikTok on there. If you want to watch this show live, there's a link to our Twitch, which is twitch.tv/OceanicGamingRadio. We go live every Monday, every second Monday night now, 7 p.m. Australian Western Standard Time. You can also join us on Discord if you would like to chat about things, you know, on Discord. That's an option. Otherwise, if you'd like to financially support us, you can go to patreon.com/OGRshow. And, you know, just pay us money, and we'd appreciate that. Anyways, we'll see you guys next time. Hopefully this episode sounds okay because we're using a new platform to record. We'll give another test again next week, see how it looks. But regardless, thanks for your time. Peace out. See you in a fortnight. Bye.